This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And today, some very big ideas to launch you off into the weekend. Science and immortality. It turns out a lowly Scyphozoan, Google it, folks. Google it. Scyphozoan may hold the key to immortality. We'll talk about that. Science and happiness. A long-term study of 200 men from the 1930s who had every reason to be happy. They got into Harvard. Well, we'll test the theory of what happened to those men. And we'll also talk with some writers who will discuss some very unscientific theories of love later on this hour. But we begin with an idea raised yesterday on our program that may end up being a test of free speech over the next few decades. If a claim is made based on so-called junk science, can it be the basis for fraud or criminal prosecution? Or can such claims be banned in some way by the state as dangerous speech? Yesterday, we looked at one such case regarding so-called gay conversion therapy programs. Some plaintiffs are seeking damages for fraud from a therapy not recognized by established science as a way to change people's sexual orientation. And therefore, according to the attorney for these plaintiffs, it's junk science. Here's Christine Sun of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
This case is getting at the heart of conversion therapy, whether there's any scientific basis for its theories. We've brought the case to show through the legal process that it's nothing more than junk science.
Nothing more than junk science. But the reason for prosecution, for fraud, or other criminal and civil penalties, a federal judge in Sacramento today takes up a case concerning a law in California that bans gay conversion therapy. Conservatives supporting gay conversion therapy will argue that the ban is an infringement of their freedom of speech, religion, and privacy, junk science or not. Are claims on the basis of junk science unprotected by the First Amendment? Is that where we're headed? Joining us, Erwin Chemerinsky is dean of and professor of law at the University of California Irvine School of Law. Professor, dean, welcome to the show.
It's great to talk with you.
Do you think this junk science idea is possibly the basis for a free speech test or a special classification of speech?
Well, I think there's undoubtedly an argument based on free speech. I don't think it's an argument likely to succeed. The government long has had the power to prohibit healthcare treatments, medical treatments that it deems to be harmful or ineffective. And what the government is saying here is so-called gay conversion therapy is a form of mental health treatment that's both ineffective and harmful.
But where does the line get drawn? I mean, you could make the same argument about a weight loss book that you would buy that maybe people use and are terribly disappointed and it leads to something or other. And if all of the claims were based on junk science, would there be some damages possible there?
I don't think so. Obviously, at some point, something could be fraudulent. If I sell you something and I promise you you're going to lose weight from it and it has no chance of doing that, then I might be able to be sued for fraud. But the reality is what makes this different is it is a form of treatment. A book that encourages people to change their sexual orientation or a book that encourages people to lose weight isn't a form of mental health treatment in the same way that this gay conversion therapy is.
What if we enlarge this out to include what happened to the tobacco industry, where their so-called claims, scientific claims, were used as a case for a sort of fraudulent imposition of healthcare problems on people who developed lung cancer? Could you make the same argument for, say, industries in the energy sector, which use scientific claims to say that climate change isn't happening, that sort of thing?
I think there's a difference between the liability of the tobacco companies and the potential liability of the energy industry. The tobacco companies have been held liable for fraud. They did fraudulently deceive people into using tobacco by hiding the health effects and, in fact, purporting to have health benefits to smoking that were nonsense. I don't know that we're going to be able to show that the claims of the energy companies hurt individuals in the sense of individual reliance that caused harm in the same way.
Junk science is a category of speech. I guess the question is, will it end up remaining protected speech over the course of this century? Is that pretty much the issue?
It's all about context. Certainly junk science in a lot of contexts is protected by the First Amendment. But as I said, the government has the power to prohibit medical treatments for physical and mental health that it deems to be harmful or ineffective. What makes this unusual is this is a form of healthcare treatment mental health care treatment that's done through speech. And that's why its advocates are arguing that free speech protects them. But free speech is not now. It never has been absolute.
Erwin Chemerinsky is dean of and professor of law at the University of California Irvine School of Law. One last question. The Supreme Court may decide today whether it will take up the case on Proposition 8 there in California, the ballot measure that was deemed unconstitutional by a federal judge in San Francisco that says only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California. What do you think the court's going to do?
The court has before it six different cases involving issues regarding marriage equality. Several of them involve Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act, a federal law, a provision that says that for purposes of the federal government and federal benefits, marriage has to be between a man and a woman. I think the court is sure to take one of those cases concerning the Defense of Marriage Act. I don't know what the court's going to do with regard to Prop 8. The way the Federal Court of Appeals wrote its decision, it's just about California, which makes it much harder to predict what the court's going to do. I think we're going to hear today, certainly no later than Monday, that the Supreme Court is taking at least one and maybe more than one case concerning marriage equality to decide by the end of June 2013.
Erwin Chemerinsky, dean of and professor of law at the University of California Irvine School of Law. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.